Hi, everybody. It's Mary Lou Tyler. This week's guest is one of those rare breeds that can cover the entire funnel and beyond. I mean, Phil has been pretty much in every position of the pipeline you could think of or even hadn't thought of yet. I'm going to try to get him to focus today on prospecting, since that's what I know. But, you know, he is the man to go to discuss things, even in marketing, probably sales ops. Phil Keane is the director of sales at Costello. Welcome to the podcast, Phil.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on today.
So when I first heard the word or the phrase Costello, I immediately thought of Abbott and Costello.
Yeah.
Is there any correlation with your company name to that fabulous team that I remember when I was a kid, I was getting my stitches. I had a, what do you call it, appendectomy, and I had just come out of the OR with stitches. Abbott and Costello was on. So, of course, I was cracking up so much that I burst my stitches and had to go back in and get restitched up. So, tell us about the company.
Well, it's a great story. So we'll have to go down that route. Maybe a different conversation one day. But yeah, so thinking about like Costello. So our website's And Costello, and it definitely is alluding to the Abbott and Costello comedy duo from many years past. Mm-hmm. And reason why we went down that path is we originally were called a couple different names as we were kind of pre-launch, and originally it was like Navigate. It's like Navigate a Call, Navigate a Deal. Was the software. Mm-hmm. And then our customers kept referring to us as like a co-pilot or a sales assistant or like this thing that kind of sits shotgun while I'm on calls to remind me to do the things I need to do while I'm on that call. And everybody kept referring to us as a person. So they try to give it a person name and not like the lead person, but like the secondary person. So it was Abbott and Costello. So it's actually really interesting. So when you become a client or start working with us, like your URL that you log into is usually your company name and Costello. So we want to be there as that kind of that co-pilot or that sales assistant while you're on calls.
That's great. Yeah, I like when there's levity involved in this whole thing, because as you know, the prospector job, it could be pretty daunting and repetitive, and it can kind of get to you after a while, which is why when you and I were talking offline, my latest kind of rant is about the fact that I have been putting out this online class. I do a free one every year, and the statistics remain constant in who signs up, who actually looks at the material, who does the homework, who attends the sessions. And it's a sliding scale of less and less people as we get down to the point. So how do we resolve this? How have you been successful? You know, you're a director of sales now. How have you been successful in getting these folks to put the time in to mastering prospecting?
So I think you hire for it. That's the key. It's easier said than done, right? So I think in the interview, I think that's types of topics that you have conversations about. So a lot of times what I'll do with candidates, and it takes a little bit longer in the sales process, but I'll throw something at them before we get a call and see if they use it while we're in the conversation. So I'll say something like, hey, at the end of the call, can you just recap what we had a conversation about at the end and just tell me this is what the structure should look like? And I'll see if they do it while they're in an interview with me.
Wow.
Or I'll say things like, hey, you know what, next, you know what, you're going to meet with Frank Dale, our CEO, but when you meet with him, can you do 3 points of research on him to know a little bit about him and have talking points about him? And I want you to ask this question specifically. So I'll kind of see if they do it naturally. And if mm-hmm. they do, they typically that's something that's just kind of comes like second nature to them. They just do it anyways. I also ask questions around, hey, what's some of the books that you're currently reading and what are you learning from those books? Or what's the last book you read and what did you learn from that book? And you can see if that person has a commitment to learning and self-learning. And I always laugh, like, if you can't teach yourself something, there's no way they're ever going to let me teach you something. So I always make sure they're self-learners in the interview process.
I love that. I mean, I can relate to that. And I told my students this just the other day. I taught an MBA class and same material. Now, these folks aren't responsible for revenue yet. It's an executive MBA class, but some of them are working as apprentices or interns. They don't necessarily have the need to generate revenue or get commission or, you know, payments, but they had the gene of learning. Yeah. So, you know, I had, I think, 18 students in the class, something like that. Everybody completed the homework. Everybody did their prospect persona definition. Even if they didn't have a real one, they invented one. They were so beefy and complete. I was amazed. And then I have sales professionals who are responsible for revenue, who are responsible for making quota, not do the homework. It was just, yeah. Oh my gosh. And I thought, okay, well, I take that personally because I think, all right, I'm a shitty teacher. You know, there might be some truth to that. So I have to fail forward and make a lot of mistakes to become a really good teacher. But of the people who did do the homework, there's 20% of those people actually started using what they created in the homework. One of them or two of them closed $300,000 deals. Now, some of my folks are all roles. But right. It just really supported, although it's not statistically relevant, it really supported the fact that if you do the work and you consistently learn, you are going to get better. You are going to meet your goals. You are going to excel at this thing called prospecting.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a role that when you dedicate time to doing it well, it's a differentiator, especially if you have phone skills. I'm interested in SDRs that are great, quote unquote, prospectors, but they don't pick the phone up. So a lot of their prospecting comes through emails. Mm-hmm. But then I've seen those types of people usually fall on their face when it comes into, I want to be an account executive.
Right.
And I want to start selling. I want to start talking to prospects. And some of us are just not putting together the skills that they need to have good qualifying dialogue with prospects a little bit later down the funnel. So there's something to spending some time in that seat and learning the role and being good at it. And I think there's different aspects that you really need to understand. So I think you need to get at one, have good conversational skills. I think that's probably core. I think you need to be able to write really well. So there's even mm-hmm. things like going to an English class or going online and doing a quick class just to refresh you on basic grammar rules, that kind of stuff. Having your friends proofread emails and teaching you why you're doing it wrong, like going to people and having this stuff, like that's how you differentiate yourself. Mm-hmm. Learning about social media and following what others are doing and doing well, it does differentiate you. And there's like I've never been a fan of quote unquote what they call social selling, where you're actively like trying to sell on social. But I think mm-hmm. there's something to building your brand over an 18 to 36 month like process. Like it takes time to really build your brand out and build your network. So this thing is like it's a time and seat type of thing where you have to learn certain amount of skills. Mm-hmm. And once you learn how to master that top of the funnel, it to your point, like you taught a class in prospecting and it equated to $300,000 of pipeline that closed for people. They have to learn how to open up deals that wouldn't have existed before on their own. So there's just different tactics now to do that.
Right. And I think you hit the nail on the head. There's also different levers. There's also different channels. So it's, you know, I have a lot of clients whose prospectors are not used to the phone. They don't like it. They say, we can get our AWAF calls, the Are We A Fit calls. We can get those by doing text, by doing social, by doing email. We don't need to know the phone. But then when they get to the AWAF call or, heaven forbid, a scoping call where they're disqualifying and aligning their value proposition to what the buyer needs are, so that the buyer's telling them how to create the plan for the next working session that they do together, that requires telephone skills. It requires studying psychology of the buyer. Just it's a very multifaceted role. And yeah. Top of funnel, 40% or 48% of people who were recently surveyed said prospecting is the hardest thing they have to do in the funnel. Now, that may or may not be true, but it's a perception.
Right.
So, you know, why not take the time? Have we not designated the roadmap properly, do you think, Phil? Or, you know, because you're saying this is what I do. Are you best practice or are you Phil practice? I mean, is this through trial and error, or is this things that you've learned along the way that you're actually benchmarking against other professionals like you?
Yeah. So I have some benchmarks, but I mean, a lot of it's things that I've built over time just from managing so many different SDRs that have gone through these types of scenarios. Mm-hmm. But I've also, at the same time, I've made tens of thousands of cold calls in my life to get on the phone and learn how to qualify somebody out. I think the sales is all about pattern recognition for the most part. And if you can understand what happens next and what's a common occurrence once you have something happen to you, and really all business is pattern recognition. So when you say something, there's a certain response that typically goes back in response to make you understand or help you understand. Or when you set a qualified meeting, there's typically a next step that has to happen. It's just understanding what's the right next step that has to happen. So that's what time and seat gets you. It gets you that pattern recognition to know, I can do this again, and I can do it again, and I can do it again. I really think why people think prospecting, like to really think about what you just said, like prospecting is the hardest part of the funnel, is because people fear just reaching out the unknown. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the hardest. That's the gut wrenching point. Like, do they even want to have a conversation with me at this point? And cold calling is just really, really difficult because of that, or even just pure prospecting. Cause you're getting, your percentage of being told no is much greater than most anywhere else in the sales funnel.
So you were saying that, you know, you have a process in place for hiring people. I don't know if you can answer this. I'm curious more than anything else, because I know my percentages. When I go in and work with clients that have already have prospectors in place, we lose sometimes 2 out of 3 over the course of getting this thing up and running. Now, it could be a bad hiring decision. It could be they came in with one frame of mind and all of a sudden we're turning them on their head by saying, no, we're doing it this way. What is your success rate relative to the industry in hiring the right person and having them move through, like moving to that AE role, or maybe they stay in marketing and do inbound leads?
Right.
What percentage of people, when you bring them on board, hang out with you for longer than, you know, the 18 months or 12 months or whatever the life cycle is nowadays?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, really, my number is always 18 months. I think that's the right number for SDRs. And I've done statistical analysis of the organization I've been at when it's, hey, and I get to this period, is typically like the 9 to 12 month mark is where you're at mastery and you're starting to figure out the role. Mm-hmm. But then you have to start as a master, start doing the job very well and producing real pipeline that we can go close.
Right.
So for me, it's thinking about, all right, from the 9 to 18 month mark is where we start to get kind of some like payback off of the hire. Mm-hmm. I'd say early on in my career, it was probably about a 50% success rate, because I didn't know what I looked for and I didn't know as a manager what was my strengths from people that would report to me. So that was probably my biggest gap. Over time now, it's probably closer to like the 70 to 80% range. We'll stay on at that length. Mm-hmm. But it takes time to understand what makes you successful or not. So
Do you actually go out to a recruiter to get people, or are you doing this hiring internally or through your network? What do you find works better for you?
So I usually internally will own it. And I have a process to how I recruit, specifically SDRs. Mm-hmm. So like today I run a local group here for sales. I usually stay in contact with people that I meet that are SDRs. So for me, like I'm constantly, probably once every other week, at least I'm getting a coffee with an SDR that I've either met in the past or that is at a different organization I was recommended to speak to. And I'm looking for A players. I want to know people that are performing well, because what I'll start to see is characteristics of people that are in my local area that are high performing SDRs. And typically when there's an A player, they know other A players as well. Mm-hmm. So whenever I go to hire, I usually have a giant step forward, because I'll get a bunch of people that will make recommendations to come work for me. And I build out a brand as somebody that'd be good to work for. And that does matter. I know when I was at my previous company, when I opened up a position, we had 2 roles open and I had 156 resumes in the first week for an SDR role. But it takes time to build out that network. And I literally have a Google Doc that's an Excel sheet looking, or Google Sheet that has names of people that I'm meeting with. And I set my quota basically every month of people I need to meet with.
Oh, that's great. So the you know, like always be closing. This is what, always be interviewing and always be hiring, or what is your motto there? So you spend a good portion of your time connecting with potential candidates, whether or not you have positions open. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's there's a lot that happens there. So for me, it's building out my network, because I'm not the only person that runs a sales team here in Indianapolis. So, or even just even in the Midwest. Like, I know people in Chicago and Columbus and Detroit and Nashville that might also be looking for SDRs. I have a good friend in St. Louis might be looking for SDRs. So sometimes it's purely just me filtering SDRs to other people and building out my name and my network as well, and helping them find good quality candidates. Like, that does matter. And I do believe in the laws of reciprocity, that it will come back eventually. So for me, it's just kind of building out my network and knowing what a good A player looks like, and knowing what a hiring profile of my community looks like, and understanding what they care about as a candidate. Like, that stuff does matter. And then you start to learn a lot more about the types of questions you should be asking in an interview to relate to these types of people.
Well, you know, that brings another question to mind, where once again, my students in my class, we have multiple buying scenarios. So we have top of funnel SDR business developers. Some take it to the first meeting, some take it to a qualification, some actually develop almost to the point of a letter of intent. So they find all the stakeholders, they make sure they're serving up the value prop, so that once the AE becomes involved, all the right people are sitting around the table, the virtual table in this case. How do you know which type of SDR goes to which role, or do you shop for the person who can get further into the funnel?
You know, I typically like to hire someone with less experience, and hire and train them. So there's different reasons behind that. I think some of it is you don't have bad habits. I think their expectation for promotion is usually more in line with what my expectations for promotions are. I think from a cost standpoint, they're typically more affordable when it comes to a candidate. And I usually pay at market value anyway, so it's. I don't want to pay over market value for somebody that might produce a little bit more. I have never seen really a better result of having somebody that's a lot more experienced. Most people that I hire, I don't see a fit most times with people that want to be a career SDR person. And that's more my personal hiring profile. I just don't align with them usually in my values and my management style. So for me, I'm very open and honest about what a timeline looks like for their promotion, but I'm also trying to guide them and give them the skills along the way to be successful for their next role. So it's really understanding your own hiring profile and what works for you from a management perspective that does matter.
And that, and how much time you're able, willing to put in, because the former model of getting a less experienced business developer in place means that product knowledge, even role-playing, the conversations, there's a lot more emphasis on the training aspect, the habitual role play, the understanding, you're going to look maybe from a script right now, but you're going to memorize it like an actor would, so you sound natural.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. And I think it's, when you think about where they go in the funnel and how far they go, I think there is some skill set things. You will get people that are SDRs that enjoy the role that will stay in the role. It doesn't happen often, but when you do, like, sometimes those people can take a little bit more. That's also things I've seen for doing like micro promotions. So maybe your first 6 months, you're basically just finding out, do they have, are they slightly past? Do they have a pulse? And not quite to the place where it's fully qualified. Like, I have 3 or 4 of BANT to get you passed off. It's like, hey, this person is alive and there's some kind of need and they have some kind of authority. That's all I really care about from a very early perspective. And they might stay that way even up to a year. Mm-hmm. And once they get to that year mark, maybe that's where you start to ask them to do a little bit more. Maybe that's where you get into the play where they're getting you. Are they aligned with budget? Do they have any authority to sign? And I know for sure the signer's on the first call, and I'll even run maybe the first initial discovery, and then I'll hand it off to you. Like, you give them additional task to help them build their tool chest, I guess, over that time frame. And then I've even created roles like enterprise BDR roles, where they're essentially riding shotgun on large deals the whole time with the AE, really helping almost in a sales assistant capacity, where they're even going a little bit further in the funnel to that, what you're talking about, like an LOI type standpoint, where it's like, this is something we definitely want to move forward with. And then they're passing off to an AE, where the AE then works for really more of like the MSA. So there's different ways I've seen doing it. It just depends on what's the best makeup for your organization and the size of deal you're working.
And a lot of times I've seen and I was in this role when I first met Aaron way back in, I don't know, 2008, from Predictable Revenue. I was in the BDR role, business development role, where I served three account executives. And based on the account executive was how far I took it into the funnel. I had one that wanted a complete bant. He just wanted to sit at the table and be an order taker. I had another one who could find money anywhere in the company, even if there was no budget, it was still a good opportunity for her to work. So I worked with the nuances of the account executives and called them in at appropriate points in the pipeline. But we mapped that whole thing out. That talk track was completely mapped out. It was mapped out by vertical, even in some cases. Yeah. Some verticals converted faster. So there's a lot of, I don't know, kind of like nimbleness one needs if you're going to be a corporate or an enterprise type sales business developer. But I see people in those roles for a longer period of time. They love dating. They don't necessarily want to get married and get to the close. You know? So I think it also depends on the corporate culture, where you are relative to the type of product you sell. And in this case, that product was sold in three different ways. One was project-based, fast and furious. The other one was like a medium size where maybe one or two departments would want the thing because they were replacing old legacy equipment, for example. And the third one was a strategic initiative where it was a long term, it required a lot of people, a lot of players. So depending on the way the product was sold, the BANT changed. So there was just a lot of little nuances that the business developer had to sort of juggle and understand. Not that they can't do it all, but it was a fun job because you never knew what was coming at you.
You know what? I've seen quite a few career SDRs that are out there that do that and love it. And I've had conversation with them because I'm just curious of, all right, so why do you stay in this role? Like, obviously you have the skill set to take, do something else or do something different. And some of them have even been like team leads for the team and they just don't want to do that anymore. They like the ability to come in. They make good money because they're sourcing large deals and they enjoy the role. They enjoy prospecting. They enjoy the puzzle pieces of how an enterprise organization works and or how a large mid-market company works. They like that. They like the pace. They like the velocity. They like going home at 5 o'clock and having to be able to shut their computer and not to worry about it. There's a lot to that. So I think definitely. It's just finding that the right mix and the right fit. And for that type of role, you have to find somebody that's looking for a very specific type of job and type of role that has a very specific skill set. But there are also people that you're probably not going to pay an entry-level wage at the same time. So
But like you said before, there are fundamentals that this role needs to have. And it sounds like you've got a fabulous blueprint for uncovering the way they talk, the conversation canvas, what that looks like, how they write. I'm a big stickler for writing, especially now that we're all crazy about hyper-personalization and stopping the cadence to actually create and craft a one-off email, if you will, or a templated email that we are customizing. So writing is, but it's a certain type of writing. It's not like my daughter's type of writing where she does thesis and has a beginning, middle, end. This is persuasive copywriting. So it's fast, it's emotional, it's triggered. It's not necessarily in the right order, but it gets people to sort of lean in. Right. They have to have some knowledge of that. So I love the fact that you're making them do a writing assignment just to see where they are. Do they have the quiver behind their ear, that kind of writer, or are they like a street writer?
And either way is fine. I mean, my templates are typically conversational. I believe prospecting should feel like if you and I were shooting an email back and forth, and we have actually for the last couple of weeks, like we shot emails back and forth to each other, and they're pretty conversational. They're not this long, drawn out, like 4.5 paragraph email. It's just not why and not how you communicate as a person. So that's what I try to teach them that type of skill. Like, how do you write a conversational email that's written like a salesperson to somebody that would be on the other end to receive that? It should feel like an internal email or an email that they would get from a friend. And I would say from an onboarding perspective, as you start going down that path, like I have a very, very clean documented process to how I onboard. The first 21 days, in fact, I know exactly what they're doing that day, the first 21 days. And then after that, every week, I know what they're doing, what their goals are for that week. So for me, it's starting off like I start at the very top. Just tell me stories about how customers use the product. That's all I care about. And we'll start the first 3 days is really just tell me stories. Here's, just remember every story possible. And then at the end of the day, usually they have to tell me like two or three stories at the end of the day. They got to be able to say it without a piece of paper in front of them. So then by the end of the 3 days, they have like nine different stories that can tell you about how customers use the product, which is always, most times, like the number one thing I used to hear from SDRs back before I used to do that from a process was, I don't know any customer stories. I don't know how our customers use it. Like, so I just force that into the process and I make it the first thing you learn. And then we start into how you have a conversation. How do you open a dialogue? How do you have a conversation? And then I do an exercise. Actually stole from Joe Bisagna out of New York, where it is a day in the life of a prospect where basically you pick four to five businesses or three to five businesses and you make them learn how they make money, how they spend money, like what roles they have in terms of who you sell into, like how many layers are in the organization, read their company news, what are their priorities. Like you really learn about like three to five businesses so they can start to recognize trends for the business. And then they read like profiles or like priority sheets for that role that you sell into. So they're starting to really think about like, all right, how, I'm trying to get my mind to the prospect. And then I force them to demo my product to me. So day five or day six is like, you demo the product. You force yourself into being really uncomfortable and show me the product, which will give them some product knowledge and then forces them to really think about what that looks like. Then I teach them how to have questions on day seven. And then from there, like day eight, like you finish the day, like at day eight, like you're making at least 12 calls. It's not a big number. It's actually a very small number, but it's, I want you to make 12 phone calls, which is our number to get one conversation. So I basically want to get them in there and just see what happens. And usually it's enough to shake the nerves a little bit. In fact, the last hiring class, one of the guys that we hired, the first time he picked the phone up, the first dial he dialed out, somebody answered the phone.
Of course.
It was funny. Like he's like, is this, he's like, what he goes, are you using, he called out our sales methodology. We're like, he's like, yeah, he's like, kind of, he's like, I'm working on it. He's like, because this is the first day I'm calling. He's in fact, this is my first dial I've ever made. And the guy it completely turned things. And like, he opened up, but he had enough stories to get the guy interested.
That's great. What a great story. Yeah. I love it.
So Phil, that's my biggest recommendation though. I was like, get on the phone very quickly. Cause it'll shake the nerves really quickly.
This has been great. I'm sure that sales managers, leaders listening to this phone call are like, oh my gosh, you know, I would love to get my hands on, you know, some of what he's doing. How can people get a hold of you if they want to pick your brain or have a conversation around your successes? What's the best way to do that?
I mean, LinkedIn, I'm on that pretty frequently. So it's Phil with two L's, Phill. Keene, Keene. Or you can shoot me an email. It's phil@andcostella.com. I'm happy to set up a call and I'll walk you through my sales dev onboarding program and how that looks and what that looks like and even share you what mine looks like. And we can go from there and have a good conversation. But yeah, happy to share all sorts of stuff that I have for resources.
I appreciate that. So I'll also put all that into the show notes on your page. This will be transcribed. So if there are bits and pieces you guys wanted to pick out of our conversation, we could probably put together a very simple little blueprint for you from the show notes. And so we'll be happy to do that. Thank you so much for your time. I think this has been a great eye-opener for some of those sales leaders who are still kind of beating their head against the wall as to how to hire the right person and what that means and what kind of knowledge they need to start up with and how they can, you know, essentially grow into the role in some cases, which is what you've had great success with, is having them grow into the role and sitting in that seat and learning more every day. Thanks again, Phil.
Thank you.